I was hallucinating from the anesthesia, but I didn't recognize the hallucinations for what they were. I had no frame of reference, nothing to give me direction. There was no light at the end of the tunnel, since there was no end to the tunnel. There was no tunnel. I remembered being a kid at the beach, tumbling around in the waves, not knowing which way was up, not knowing when I'd be able to take my next breath of air. I felt the same disorientation now. When I was a kid, I trusted the waves to toss me onto the shore before it was too late, even though their play was a little too rough at times. It was like playing chicken. The fear was delicious, and I went back for more. There was nothing delicious about this fear. Hi, my name is Deb Brandon, and these are excerpts from my book, But My Brain Had Other Ideas, Memoir of Recovery from Brain Injury. It's the story of my journey from brain bleeds and subsequent brain surgeries through ongoing recovery. This was not how I imagined my life. I was an academic, a successful professor of mathematics at a prestigious university. I was multilingual thanks to my international upbringing. I loved to travel, especially to developing countries where I could explore traditional textile work, enriching my own abilities as a weaver. I was the married mother of two teenagers. We lived a comfortable life in the suburbs. I was young, barely in my 40s, and healthy, with a healthy lifestyle. I'd had no car accident, concussion, or stroke. A year ago, no one would have considered me at high risk for brain injury. I was not supposed to be here. My MRI showed that I had hemorrhages scattered throughout my brain, originating from multiple lesions that were either malignant or cavernous angiomas. The report suggested that they were most probably cavernous angiomas, which agreed with my neurologist's diagnosis after he studied the images. I had multiple clusters of malformed blood vessels in my brain, a life-threatening condition with several labels: cavernous angioma, cavernoma, cavernous malformation, cavernous hemangioma, and cerebral cavernous malformation, CCM. Cavernous angiomas are distant cousins of aneurysms. An aneurysm is a single blood-filled bulge in a blood vessel. Cavernous angiomas consist of clusters of dilated blood vessels, which form multiple blood-filled caverns reminiscent of raspberries in appearance. As with aneurysms, the walls of these blood vessels are defective and can leak blood. Cavernous angiomas are found in the brain or spinal cord, where bleeds can cause serious damage. They can present sporadically, or they can be genetic. I had cavernous angiomas scattered throughout my brain, some of which had bled. The large number of lesions in my brain was an indication that my condition was genetic. The good news that I did not have an AVM didn't take away from the fact that I had a life-threatening condition, CCM scattered throughout my brain. I was extremely anxious during my follow-up appointment. I sat on the exam table fidgeting. How will I know if they bleed again? What symptoms should I watch out for? The neurosurgeon smiled. Oh, you'll know all right. He then added, chances are that you're in the clear. It was probably a one-time deal. 6 months later, I proved him wrong. There's nothing out there for me, nothing to hold me, no support. I cannot surrender myself to the endless void. I was hanging on to the tent pole, gripping it hard with both hands for what, 10, 15 minutes, more? It was my lifeline, the only thing that made sense in the mindless chaos surrounding me, the only thing that kept me from being swept into bedlam. Patches of colors encircled me, ever moving, shifting, lurching, staggering. Words, laughter, rumbles, bellows, shrieks darted by. The only object that maintained its solidity was the tent pole. Joyce's voice emerged from the madness. Let's get you out of here. I heard the words rumble, but they didn't register. They came from outside the precarious haven of me and my tent pole. I was completely overcome by my battle for survival, my struggle to keep the world at bay, my fight to stem the flow of raw fear that flooded me. Come on, let's go for a walk. Her words grated on my consciousness. My brain couldn't handle more than the bare basics. Any input from the outside, including Joyce's voice, was more than I could fathom. Come on, Deb. A wisp of a memory fainter than a thought floated by. Her voice meant safety. The next thought slammed directly into it. It was too late. No one could rescue me. The only safety zone I had access to was right here, me and my tent pole. There was nothing safe about out there where Joyce existed. I felt her touch on my arm and teetered. I heard my breathing quick, loud. I saw movement out of the corner of my eye and lurched away from it, then swayed back and forth, my biceps and triceps expanding and contracting as I gripped the pole, fighting to regain my unsteady equilibrium. You can do it. Do what? Move away from my tent pole? But there was danger beyond it. Danger of falling, danger of everything. I'll help you. How? I knew she meant well, but it was far too late. It was impossible. I studied my feet. They were in constant motion, my toes wriggling up and down, my ankles wobbling from side to side, my weight continually shifting from the balls of my feet to my heels, to the sides and back, all my muscles tensing and releasing, tensing and releasing. I couldn't go anywhere. Where would I go? Everywhere was noise and colors and motion. There was nowhere to go. She was insistent. Come on, just follow me. You can do this. But no, I couldn't, not even with a guiding hand. I was too far gone. There was no way out for this one. I was really stuck this time, holding on to the tent pole for dear life, held captive by sheer intense fear of losing myself to the chaos, multiplied by the fear of an eternal fall. Take one step over here. She grasped me firmly by the arm. I rocked wildly on my feet. Gradually, the rocking abated, and with it, the worst of the fear began to subside. My body settled back into the constant perturbations and adjustments that kept me upright. A realization emerged through my defenses. Joyce's hold on me had dampened my oscillations. Her support felt sturdier than the tent poles. It was safer. I realized that I could lean on her. I should lean on her. I should let go of the tent pole, if only I could move. I contemplated my feet. I focused hard, willing my right foot to shift towards Joyce. I tried to put more weight on my right heel, but my foot rebelled, causing my entire body to lurch to the left, back towards the tent pole, away from Joyce. My grip on the pole tightened. Joyce moved in closer, her body right up against mine, solid, safe. Her left arm around me, the other arm supporting my right arm. She tugged slightly at it, and again my body rocked sideways in response. I heard myself taking short, shallow breaths. Steady, steady, I've got you. I felt my eyes smart. It was hopeless. I was now mentally able to accept her help in theory. I could acknowledge Joyce's existence and let her into my world, but in practice, my brain couldn't function at that level. I couldn't do my part in the rescue operation. I gulped and concentrated on my feet. If I turned towards her, I'd be fine. All I needed to do was turn both feet in her direction. I tried to gather my wayward wits to focus on that one tiny action. I tried to do it in one motion, shift both feet at the same time. My wobbling feet weren't complying. Perhaps one foot would suffice. Before I finished the thought, something happened. Did Joyce pull me? Did I somehow manage to move? I was suddenly in Joyce's arms, fully supported, my head buried in her shoulders, my shoulders shaking as I sobbed.